Okay, let's unpack this, because for years, the whole world of data privacy felt like a necessary evil.
Oh, completely. A universal dread, really.
Yeah, exactly. If you
Well.
were a business owner, a compliance officer, or just anyone handling sensitive information, privacy was just this thing you looked at with a certain amount of dread.
It was essentially a mandatory, annoying legal tax.
That's the perfect term for it, a legal tax.
Yeah, it was pure overhead. You'd hire a consultant, they give you this massive checklist, you tick the boxes,
Yep.
and you're spending money mostly to fix problems you already had, or more often, just to dodge these massive potential fines.
Especially those terrifying GDPR fines we all heard about.
Exactly. The whole mindset was reactive. It was all about legal mitigation, not about business strategy.
Right. The absolute definition of a one-and-done compliance approach.
Yep.
We do the bare minimum, get the auditors off our backs, file the paperwork.
And hope you don't have to think about it for another year.
Yes. But looking at our sources today, everything we're seeing makes it so clear. That whole tick box compliance mindset, it is officially dead as we head through 2025.
It's utterly obsolete. I mean, you have these massive forces just completely reshaping the landscape. You've got the EU AI Act, which is a giant. The whole
Huge.
post-cookie reality is finally here. And then this incredible accelerating patchwork of US state laws. It's not just California anymore.
No, it's stretching from Iowa to Minnesota, all over the place.
And all of that means privacy isn't some static target you aim for once a year. It has become a core business differentiator.
And I think that framing right there, that's the key takeaway for you, our listener, right from the get-go. Privacy is no longer just something you pay to avoid a penalty. It's something you invest in to get a real competitive advantage.
Absolutely. If you're still holding on to that old reactive checklist mentality, you're not just taking on huge risks. Crucially, you're leaving real revenue and market share on the table.
You're actually losing money by not investing.
You are. The sophisticated buyers of these services, now we're talking C-suite leaders, they're not just looking for a lawyer to cover them. They are demanding strategic partners, people who can translate robust privacy practices into measurable business growth and superior brand trust. They want to monetize their compliance efforts.
So that's really our mission for this deep dive. We're going to cut through all the noise to get our heads around this monumental shift. We need to analyze exactly why privacy is now a strategic accelerant, how the AI revolution and the cookie apocalypse have totally changed the technical and legal rules.
And maybe most importantly,
Yeah, what steps companies have to take right now to get ready for the challenges that are definitely coming in 2026?
because if you thought you were done with privacy compliance, then this deep dive is your necessary reality check. So let's start where it always starts in the boardroom, the
The
money.
balance sheet. Yeah, exactly. Our sources highlight this brilliant concept called the paradigm flip. It contrasts the financial view of privacy from, say, 5 years ago with the view you absolutely have to have today.
And the flip is,
Yeah.
it's dramatic because it fundamentally changes what you mean by spend.
Okay, explain that.
Historically, any money you spent on privacy was just budgeted as operational debt.
Operational debt. I like that.
It was capital you were putting out to face past mistakes, right? Paying lawyers after a breach or just maintaining the bare minimum to keep the lights on.
It was always seen as a drain, something to minimize at all
A
costs.
sunk cost, yeah.
Yeah.
A compliance requirement you kind of resented paying.
But now we have to look at that same expenditure as an investment in a strategic business enabler. So the big question is why? Why did that narrative flip so suddenly?
Well, because the cost of not doing it has become astronomical. The cost of complexity, of slowness, of a lack of trust. It's just too high now.
So the opportunity cost is now bigger than the investment cost.
Dramatically bigger. When your organization can't manage its data provenance, or when your sales cycles drag on for months because of compliance friction, that loss of opportunity just dwarfs the cost of being proactive.
So by building this robust, continuous privacy infrastructure, you're not paying down debt anymore.
No, you're investing in acceleration. Privacy becomes the accelerator pedal, not the brake pedal.
That's a really powerful way to put it. And the source material breaks this down for us into three very specific, quantifiable ways that modern privacy drives real business value. Let's make sure we're clear on the application of this.
Agreed. These are the three points that really define why the C-suite needs to care about this stuff beyond just checking a box.
Okay, the first one is probably the most direct ROI you can get, accelerating deals. Let's talk about that infamous vendor security assessment bottleneck in the B2B world.
Yes, this is a massive hidden point of friction, especially for any SaaS company or tech vendor.
So walk us through it.
Okay, so imagine company A wants to buy a critical piece of software from vendor B. Before that contract gets signed, vendor B has to go through this grueling security and privacy assessment.
The dreaded questionnaire.
Exactly. Run by company A's internal compliance and legal teams. And look, it's a crucial step for risk mitigation, but it almost always devolves into weeks, sometimes months, of back and forth emails, documents, reviews.
And every single day that assessment is held up is a day vendor B isn't recognizing revenue and a day company A isn't getting the tool they need.
Precisely. It's a huge bottleneck in the enterprise sales cycle.
Right.
But, and this is the key, a vendor with a truly mature privacy posture, one that's implemented a global privacy framework that can prove clean data provenance.
They change that whole negotiation.
They completely change it. They can potentially shortcut that entire due diligence process.
So what used to take months now takes?
Days. We're seeing companies pass these assessments, which used to take 60, maybe 90 days in a matter of a few days.
Right.
Because they can offer immediate ironclad proof of compliance. Proof that doesn't just cover GDPR, but also CCPA, VCDPA, and all the new AI governance stuff. The vendor transforms privacy from a sales blocker into a sales enabler.
And if you can close a major deal 2 months faster than your competitor, just because your privacy architecture is better,
that ROI is instantly quantifiable. You can take that right to the CFO.
Yeah, the conversation shifts from, so are you compliant, to, okay, you're compliant, we can start tomorrow.
It just accelerates the entire deal flow. It's a massive competitive edge.
Okay, so the second area is a bit more abstract, maybe, but just as powerful, especially for consumer brands, building brand equity. Specifically, this idea of the trust premium.
The trust premium has never been more relevant. I mean, think about the world we live in. We're just bombarded by news of data breaches, sophisticated deepfakes. There's a general collapse of consumer confidence in digital platforms.
Right, so in that environment, trust becomes the market's scarcest resource.
And basic economics tells us what happens when something is scarce.
Its value goes up. So companies that can reliably offer trust can command a premium price.
Precisely. When a company truly commits to privacy by design, which means privacy controls and ethical data handling are baked into the product from day one, not just bolted on later.
An afterthought, yeah.
It creates this inherent, reliable brand promise. It signals that you're not just legal, you're ethical, you're reliable. And in sensitive sectors, finance, healthcare, high-end retail customers are demonstrably willing to pay more for that inherent trust.
So how does a company actually communicate that commitment? It can't just be a line in the mission statement, right?
Oh, no, it has to be tangible proof. It means being transparent about how data flows. It means offering intuitive, non-manipulative consent controls. It means getting certifications that prove your compliance is continuous.
It becomes a marketing asset.
A fundamental marketing asset. It allows you to position yourself as a safe harbor in a chaotic digital sea. Your brand gets shielded by this trust moat, which makes you more resilient and more valuable.
Okay, so we have sales acceleration, brand valuation. The third strategic driver is one I think a lot of executives miss, enhancing data quality.
This is such a critical internal feedback loop, and it seems counterintuitive at first, right? You'd think stricter privacy means you get less data.
Yeah, that's the common assumption.
But for first-party data, the reality is the exact opposite.
Okay, walk us through the behavioral link there. How does being compliant lead to cleaner data?
It's a direct function of user trust. Simple as that. When a user trusts your brand, they trust you're handling their information ethically, responsibly, and for their benefit, they are way more willing to share information with you.
And not just share it, but share better information.
Exactly. The data they share is higher quality, it's more accurate, they're more motivated to keep it up to date.
So if I trust my bank's app, I'm more likely to fill out the optional fields, and I'll make sure my contact info is right because I know you're not just going to sell it off to some data broker.
Precisely. When trust is low, users get hesitant. They lie on forms, they opt out of everything, or they just disengage. That leads to sparse, unreliable data.
So good. Transparent privacy practices lead directly to better, cleaner, more accurate first-party data.
And given our massive reliance on machine learning and AI today, cleaner data translates directly into exponentially better decisions, fewer algorithmic mistakes, and ultimately much better AI model performance.
So the whole equation just flips on its head. Privacy isn't a cost that hurts the business. It's an investment that speeds up sales, increases brand value, and makes your core operational data smarter.
It changes the whole C-suite question. It's no longer, how little can we spend to avoid getting fined?
It's, how can we maximize this investment to crush our competitors?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that strategic foundation is crystal clear. Now let's get into the weeds a bit. Let's look at the specific tectonic forces that are driving these operational changes this year. Our sources point to three that demand immediate attention. And the first one is a seismic event, the AI governance convergence.
This is, without a doubt, the defining regulatory shift of the decade. The EU AI Act and other frameworks like it have permanently merged data protection with AI oversight.
So the scope of what an auditor looks at has just exploded.
It's expanded far beyond just how you handle data. The source material really stresses this. Auditors are no longer just looking at spreadsheets of personal data. They are now assessing data provenance.
Let's define that for everyone. Why is provenance suddenly the word of the year?
Data provenance is the verifiable, detailed lineage of your data. Where did it come from? How was it collected? What's been done to it since? And most critically, was valid consent obtained at the moment of collection?
And this is so vital because with AI, the risk isn't just about storing data anymore. It's about using it in complex ways.
Exactly. And that old saying from computer science, garbage in, garbage out.
It now carries a massive legal penalty.
It does. The legal corollary the source identifies is, frankly, chilling. Illegal in, liability out. It means if your company trains its AI models on data that was scraped without a proper legal basis or without consent, that AI model and every single output or decision it ever makes inherits that original legal liability.
So the liability is active and it's compounding. If I use an illegally trained model to make hiring decisions, I'm liable for the illegal data and for any biased or discriminatory outcomes.
Absolutely. A consultant's due diligence now has to stretch back years to verify the legality of those training data sets, not just the security of today's data.
And the source has a pretty stark warning about this. It says, if your consultant isn't talking about AI model transparency and algorithmic bias right alongside traditional privacy,
they're giving you half a map.
And you're trying to navigate a minefield with half a map.
It's a terrifying operational risk because data protection today isn't just about unauthorized access, it's about unauthorized or unfair use.
Okay, so connect those dots for us. Why are transparency and bias now inseparable from privacy?
Because if your AI model is trained on biased data, say historical loan data that reflects past societal biases, the decisions it makes about credit scores or job applicants can violate fundamental rights to non-discrimination. The EU AI Act puts those fairness metrics squarely under the governance microscope.
So you can't claim you're compliant on privacy if your algorithm is demonstrably unfair or opaque.
You can't. It moves compliance partners into the realm of data science and ethics, which is a new skill set for a lot of firms.
So given all that, what's the one killer question, the one litmus test? A company should ask a potential consulting firm to see if they really get this convergence.
Simple. Ask for their AI ethics framework.
Don't just ask about GDPR articles.
No, ask them specifically how they integrate concepts like fairness, explainability, XAI, and algorithmic drift into their governance strategy. If all they do is circle back to Articles 5 and 6 of GDPR, they're still operating on that old half a map model.
That one question instantly filters out the old school auditors from the modern strategic partners.
It does.
Okay, let's move to the second major force. This is one we've been talking about for years, but it has finally fully arrived. The death of third-party cookies. The cookie-pocalypse.
It's no longer a future threat. It's here. Ad tech and digital marketing have pretty much completed their shift away from third-party tracking toward first-party and zero-party data.
First-party is data you collect yourself. Zero-party is data the customer just gives you.
Willingly and proactively, yeah. And this means the whole relationship between the marketing department and the privacy office has fundamentally changed.
Privacy is no longer the department of no that they just submit paperwork to.
No, they've become a core, indispensable marketing stakeholder. Marketers can't just rely on anonymous surveillance anymore. They have to earn the data.
And to do that, they need privacy teams to help them build what the source calls consent-aware marketing stacks.
Exactly. And that stack is about more than just a legal banner asking for cookie consent.
So what does it look like in practice?
It's an architecture built around high-trust user journeys. It's about transparency. It's about a value exchange. Instead of a confusing, annoying legal notice, the goal is to clearly explain why you want the data and what specific value the customer will get in return.
So consent becomes an active, transparent transaction.
It's the difference between coercion and building a relationship. And this whole shift has forced the creation of new tools to measure marketing effectiveness without tracking individuals.
Right, which brings us to what the sources call the essential tools for revenue-focused privacy buyers: privacy-preserving measurement and clean rooms.
If a company is serious about their post-cookie strategy, they have to be adopting these.
Tell us more about clean rooms. That term has been flying around, but why are they suddenly mandatory?
Because marketers still need to know if their campaigns are working right. They need aggregate insights. But they can't link performance back to an individual user anymore. Clean rooms are the solution.
How do they work?
Think of it as a secure, neutral digital space, often provided by a cloud vendor. Two different companies, say, a brand and a publisher, can both bring their own first-party data into the clean room.
And the data is matched up.
It's matched securely using cryptographic techniques that keep it anonymous. It allows them to run complex analytics on the aggregated population-like audience overlap or campaign attribution without either party ever seeing the other's raw personal data.
So as the advertiser, I can confirm that 40% of the people who saw my ad also bought my product.
Without ever knowing the name or address of a single one of those people.
You get the powerful insight without the privacy violation.
It transforms measurement from surveillance to statistics. It's the only viable way forward.
Okay, the third major force isn't technical, it's behavioral. Enforcement intensity and dark patterns.
This is a big one. Regulators globally are out of the education phase. They've spent the last 5 years publishing guidelines and giving warnings.
The grace period is over.
It's over. Now they are focusing on aggressive, high penalty enforcement, and it's highly targeted.
The sources point to two areas where that enforcement is most intense. The first is a really sensitive one: biometric data.
This is a critical area of exposure for so many companies. Any mismanagement of highly sensitive biometric data, we're talking facial scans, fingerprints, voice prints, is attracting some of the highest fines we've ever seen.
And the reason is pretty fundamental, right?
It's because biometrics are unique and permanent. If your password leaks, you can change it. If your face scan leaks, you can't change your face.
The risk is indelible. And we're seeing this reflected in very specific laws, like in the U.S.
Oh, absolutely. The U.S. is a great example of the complexity. You have to look at the state level. Illinois, with its Biometric Information Privacy Act, or BIPA, has been incredibly aggressive.
That's the one that allows individuals to sue, right?
Yes, it creates a private right of action. Mm-hmm. Individuals can sue a company for improper collection, even if there hasn't been a data breach. That's a huge financial risk for anyone using biometric time clocks or access controls.
Or even customer authentication on an app.
You have to have a localized state-by-state strategy. The risk here is just exponential.
Okay, and the second area of aggressive enforcement is the crackdown on so-called dark patterns. This has gone from just being an annoyance for users to a major legal liability for companies.
Dark patterns are basically manipulative UI/UX designs. They're built to trick or nudge users into consenting to things they'd otherwise say no to.
Like the pre-checked box that's hidden way down the page.
Or the giant bright green accept all button right next to a tiny gray hard-to-read link for manage preferences. It's exploiting cognitive bias to harvest consent.
It's prioritizing the company's data goals over the user's right to choose.
And regulators have zero tolerance for it now. The legal warning is very clear. If your consent flow is designed to be too easy to say yes to,
or too hard to say no to,
it likely violates the standard for valid consent, which under GDPR, CCPA, all of them, must be free, specific, informed, and unambiguous. Dark patterns destroy that, making all the data you collect illegal.
So compliance isn't just about the words in your privacy policy anymore.
No. Ethical design of the user interface is now a mandatory compliance requirement that regulators are actively auditing.
All right, let's pivot to the practical side of this for global companies.
Yeah.
You know, back in the tick box days, the general idea was if we can just handle GDPR, we're pretty much covered everywhere else.
That was the assumption, yeah.
But a huge question our sources tackle is this: we're already GDPR compliant. Isn't that enough for the U.S. market?
And the answer, to be as clear as possible, is an emphatic no. Relying only on GDPR in the U.S. today is a huge strategic risk.
So GDPR is the foundation, but it's not the whole building.
It's an excellent foundation. It established core principles like data minimization and individual rights. But it's not a comprehensive framework for the U.S. because of that constantly growing state-level patchwork.
Okay, so where do the U.S. state laws, California's CCPA, Colorado CPA, the new ones in Minnesota, where do they really differ from GDPR in a way that creates a gap?
The differences can be subtle, but they have enormous commercial implications. GDPR is very focused on the legal basis for processing data. U.S. laws, on the other hand, often introduce very specific mechanisms focused on the commercial exchange of data.
And this comes down to two key concepts, right? Opt-out of sales sharing and how they handle sensitive data processing.
Exactly. Let's start with that first one. Under GDPR, you have a right to object or withdraw consent. But the U.S. concept of opt-out of sale is different.
How so?
The definition of sale in a law like CCPA is much broader than just a cash transaction. It can include exchanging data for any valuable consideration or even just sharing it for cross-context behavioral advertising.
So something that wouldn't be a sale in Europe might be one in California.
Precisely. A European company might rely on legitimate interest as its legal basis for sharing data within its corporate group for analytics. Under GDPR, that's often fine. But for a California resident, that same act could be a sale, which means you must have a clear, distinct, do not sell my personal information link.
Wow. So your internal data sharing, totally compliant under GDPR, could be a violation in the U.S. if you don't have that specific opt-out.
You're managing two different legal frameworks at the same time, and then you have sensitive data processing.
Right.
Now, GDPR has strict rules for sensitive data, like health or political opinions, but many U.S. state laws require a specific, granular opt-in for processing sensitive data, even if GDPR might allow it under a different basis.
So the end result is that a one-size-fits-all approach is dead.
It's dead. In 2025, you need a global privacy framework that can be localized, a core policy that adapts to meet the highest standard in every single place you do business.
And managing that kind of complexity sounds expensive. Which brings us to the next point. How does the EU AI Act blow up my privacy consulting budget?
It creates an immediate substantial demand for highly specialized talent, and yeah, that expands the budget. The big reason is the shift from the traditional Data Protection Impact Assessment, or DPIA,
which we've been doing for years,
to the new requirement for AI Impact Assessments, AIIAs.
Okay, so how is an AIIA different? Why does it cost more?
A DPIA is mostly about personal data handling security, access controls, that sort of thing. An AIIA for a high-risk system under the EU AI Act, like a hiring tool, has to go so much further. It's way more technical.
Because it's assessing the algorithm itself.
It's assessing algorithmic risk. It needs to verify the data's provenance, quantify fairness and bias, check for robustness, and ensure there are transparency mechanisms built into the AI model.
So this isn't a job for one lawyer with a policy document anymore.
No way. And that's the whole budget driver. It forces consultants to bridge this historic gap between the data science team and the legal team.
Two departments that often don't speak the same language.
Exactly. You need a privacy-focused intermediary who can translate legal risk into technical requirements and vice versa. That multidisciplinary skill set is specialized, and it costs more.
It all makes the case for continuous management, which leads to our last practical question here. Is privacy as a service, or PRIAS, better than just hiring a one-time consultant?
For any decent-sized organization operating in more than one place today, the old model of getting a yearly snapshot of your compliance from a consultant is dangerously obsolete. So yes, overwhelmingly, PRIAS is the recommended model.
It's the difference between using a paper map from 5 years ago and using a live, updated GPS, right?
Perfect analogy. Regulations aren't changing every few years anymore. New state laws, new AI Act guidance. The landscape is changing on a quarterly basis.
So a one-time audit is outdated the second the consultant walks out the door,
leaving the company completely exposed. A PRIAS subscription model mitigates that volatility. It guarantees that your mandatory legal documentation, the record of processing activity, or ROPA, is always live.
The ROPA is the master document of all your data flows.
And in a subscription model, that framework is continuously managed and updated for every new regulation. You're basically outsourcing the burden of staying current, which ensures you avoid the trap of having a compliant snapshot that's worthless 6 months later.
It lets your in-house teams focus on strategy, knowing the foundation is solid.
It shifts the cost from reactive debt management to proactive risk mitigation.
So if 2025 has been this year of AI readiness, you know, cleaning up data, setting up governance, our sources are all pointing to 2026 as the year of algorithmic accountability.
This is a huge shift. It's the era where legal and ethical responsibility moves from just protecting the data itself to governing the autonomous decisions made by the machines that use that data.
The focus moves to the consequences of the AI's actions.
It's a completely unprecedented shift in legal focus.
And the first major development here sounds like something out of science fiction, but it's coming fast: the rise of agentic AI governance.
This is a fundamental technological pivot. Today, we mostly interact with generative AI, right? Systems that create text or images when we prompt them.
Right.
In 2026, the focus is going to accelerate toward AI agents. These are autonomous systems that can actually take actions on your behalf. They might schedule logistics, manage a stock portfolio, or execute supply chain decisions, all without direct human oversight for every step.
They have agency. They're making choices. And that creates a terrifying legal black box if the governance isn't there from the start.
It creates a massive governance challenge around the idea of consent. The source identifies the key question. How do you manage consent when the thing asking for the data isn't a person, but an autonomous AI agent?
So if my personal AI assistant books my travel, managing my location, my payment info, who's responsible for ensuring consent? Me or the agent?
The strategic response required is a move away from the traditional human-focused notice and choice model, you know, clicking a box on a website, to what's being called API-level consent for machines.
That sounds very technical. What does that actually look like in practice?
It means consent management isn't just on the user interface. It's embedded directly into the software's API, its technical fabric. When an AI agent tries to do something, say, request your purchase history, the API call has to simultaneously check a machine-readable consent ledger.
And that ledger verifies that the user authorized that specific agent for that specific purpose.
Yes. The agent itself carries its consent authority with it, and it's checked instantly, machine to machine, before any data moves. Privacy becomes a core function of the software architecture itself.
Okay, moving on. There's a big deadline coming up. The second major shift: full EU AI Act enforcement and high-risk compliance.
This is a hard deadline. By August 2026, all the requirements for high-risk AI systems become fully enforceable in the EU. We're talking about systems used in recruitment, credit scoring, insurance, medical diagnostics.
The things that can have the biggest impact on people's lives.
Exactly. And because the stakes are so high, the existing compliance tools like a DPIA just aren't enough anymore.
The source is very clear on that. It warns that for these high-risk systems, a traditional DPIA will fail to give you adequate legal cover.
Which means companies have to be preparing now to conduct FRIA, Fundamental Rights Impact Assessments.
So how does a FRIA go beyond what a DPIA does?
A DPIA is mostly focused on privacy risks and data protection. A FRIA takes a much broader, more societal view. It systematically assesses the AI's potential impact on a user's fundamental rights as defined in the EU Charter.
So things like non-discrimination, human dignity.
Exactly. Protection of personal data, access to a remedy. It means evaluating the model's fairness and societal impact. And it requires teams from legal, ethics, HR, not just IT.
The liability is now tied to the ethical outcome of the algorithm, not just the security of the data.
And this is the big warning for listeners. If your current privacy partners aren't already building templates and processes for FRIAs right now, your ability to be compliant by the 2026 deadline is in serious jeopardy. This needs to be a priority today.
All right, next up is a major geopolitical and infrastructure shift: geopatriation and sovereign clouds.
This is being driven by global political tensions and the rise of strict data sovereignty laws. More and more countries are mandating that certain types of data, sometimes all personal data, have to be stored and processed entirely within their own borders.
So a big global company can't just rely on three massive data centers around the world anymore.
Correct. That centralized, efficient global data lake is fast becoming a massive legal liability. The result is what the sources are calling geopatriation. This huge strategic move away from global clouds toward regional sovereign clouds.
Which sounds incredibly inefficient for a multinational trying to run global operations. How do you get business intelligence if your data is legally locked down in dozens of different countries?
That is the core technical challenge for the next few years. You have to get global insights without breaking the law. And this is where strategic privacy partners become architects, developing sophisticated data localization strategies.
What does a good data localization strategy look like?
It means you flip the model. Instead of moving the data to the processing, you move the processing to the data. This could involve distributed databases or advanced techniques like federated machine learning,
where the AI model trains locally on the data inside the sovereign cloud.
And only the aggregated, anonymized model updates, not the raw personal data, are sent back to the central hub for global insights. It's highly technical, but it's the only way to satisfy the law while maintaining global intelligence.
Finally, let's wrap up this look ahead with the technologies that are going from cutting edge to just standard. Privacy-enhancing technologies, PTs, become standard.
The source material is very direct about this. By 2026, simply encrypting your data is the absolute bare minimum. It's not advanced security anymore, it's just expected. Regulators and customers will demand advanced PETs as the new standard.
And the sources highlight two specific PETs that will become mandatory: synthetic data and confidential computing.
Synthetic data is maybe the most exciting development for risk mitigation. You use AI to generate entirely fake data sets that perfectly mirror the statistical patterns of your real customer data, but contain zero actual personal information.
So you can test systems and train machine learning models with all the utility of the real data, but with none of the privacy risk.
Exactly. It completely eliminates the privacy risk because the data is literally fabricated. It's invaluable for development and safely sharing data with third parties.
And the second one, confidential computing.
This is a game changer for cloud processing. It uses specialized black box hardware or secure enclaves where data is protected and encrypted, not just when it's stored or being moved, but while it's actively in use in memory.
Meaning, even the cloud provider who owns the server can't see the data while it's being processed.
It's cryptographically shielded from its own environment. This is absolutely vital for processing high-risk data like medical records or financial data in shared clouds. It will become a core requirement to prove due diligence by 2026.
These PTs really draw a clear line between the old definition of secure and the new standard of privacy enhanced. #outro.
Wow, that was a truly comprehensive and I think necessary reality check. We started this deep dive seeing how privacy is no longer a legal tax, a cost to be minimized,
but is unequivocally a strategic driver for business growth. Yeah, and that shift is being accelerated by AI governance, the end of cookies, and the rise of clean rooms, and this really targeted regulatory enforcement on biometrics and dark patterns.
We saw that GDPR is a great baseline, but it's just not enough for the complex U.S. state patchwork, which demands a global but localizable framework. The speed of change now requires continuous PRIAS models over those static one-time audits.
And looking ahead to 2026, it's all about algorithmic accountability, the rise of agentic AI demanding API-level consent,
the geopolitical mess of geopatriation, and the mandatory adoption of PTs like synthetic data and confidential computing.
I think the ultimate actionable takeaway for any leader listening to this is captured perfectly by the source material's final thought. The companies that are going to win and dominate in 2026, they won't be the ones that just spent the least on compliance or even the ones who managed to avoid the biggest fines.
No, the winners will be the organizations that used this moment strategically to build a trust moat around their customers. Trust is the ultimate strategy. It speeds up your deals, it lets you charge a premium, and it gives you the clean, reliable data you need to fuel your AI. That moat makes you both resilient and indispensable.
That trust moat sounds like the safest and most profitable place a business could be. But as we close out, you introduced this incredible idea of agentic AI making decisions for users and the API-level consent that requires. That completely changes how we think about the customer relationship. It raises a final provocative thought for our listener to chew on.
Well, when you look ahead, if a customer's main interaction with your company is handled not by the person, but by an autonomous program acting on their behalf, this sophisticated AI agent, we have to fundamentally rethink how we even measure trust. How does a company measure, manage, and audit trust when their primary customer isn't a person's click, but an automated algorithmic negotiation? What new metrics define that relationship when the user is actually a machine acting on human intent?
That changes the entire definition of a customer. Something really vital to think about as we all prepare for the coming era of algorithmic accountability.